San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from La Valencia Hotel in beautiful La Jolla on this Saturday night. We're being heard with 50,000 watts of power, heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to Riverside in the desert. And now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He is a marathon runner, very accomplished. He is a family office advisor to several high-net-worth families and a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable and a best-selling author. And his name is Richard Muzio. Good evening, Richard. How are you tonight?
Marvelous. I actually survived yesterday, the 40th anniversary of the Battle of the Sexes. Didn't know if I was going to get through alive.
Yeah, that was an historic day. It was the day also that Jim Croce passed in the tragic plane crash. And I know they had an event down at Croce's. And
but I got so many emails and texts, I couldn't even see straight.
All about the Billie Jean King, the Battle of the Sexes 40 years ago.
Sold some more books or whatever. That's good.
That's outstanding. Everything going well on Amazon and such?
www.sowhatsyourplay.com. I rose as high as number 9 under history, and I was in like the top 9,000 out of 3.5 million.
My gosh. See, folks, if you carve out a book that's just a very, you have your own niche, you can be a best-selling author, right, Richard?
Yeah, my challenge was what category to be under.
Well, it could be you're in several. So, but tonight we have some very special guests. But I'd like to start the ball rolling with the wine director here from La Valencia Hotel. We've had her on before. She's always a treat to visit us. And her name is Tammy Wong. Tammy, how are you tonight?
Hi, I'm fabulous. Thanks for having me. It's always so much fun.
Yes. Tell us what's going on wine wise. What'd you bring us tonight? She always brings us some outstanding wine. So what do we have here?
Yes. Today we are drinking Salina Pinot Gris, 2012 vintage from the Willamette Valley in Oregon. It's just one of my favorite varietals. It's a wonderful pairing with food. It's a kind of a fall wine. You know, it's a little fuller bodied. Today is the last day of summer of Riesling, so we'll be changing our wine list this week. And we were really successful. We got a lot of Riesling in people's glasses. And so it's not all sweet. Mm-hmm. It's dry. It's great with food. But it's time for fall wine, and we'll be changing the by the glass list. We're going to have new wine lists this week. There's a lot going on here. We've got our entryway open. Mm-hmm. We've got the Heavenly Hog Fall Pig Out coming up.
October
11th. Good times. October 11th. Mm-hmm. You can go to brownpapertickets.com for tickets for that. There's still some left. Mm-hmm. And there's 9 courses. There's going to be a pig cut up and divided amongst the 9 chefs. Mm-hmm. And each one gets a different part. And then I'll be working with, I think, Nate from Tornado. He will be doing the beer pairings, and I'll be doing the wine pairings. So I'm starting to think about what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Pairing-wise, and so there's a lot happening here. It's really exciting.
I like the pig because I wrote about a male chauvinist pig from Bobby Riggs who got carved up by Billie Jean King. This is very appropriate time.
Well, actually, she presented him with a little piglet. Remember that?
She presented him with a little piglet before the start of the Battle of the Sexes. Exactly. Yeah. He gave her a 20-pound sugar daddy.
Anyway, Tammy, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for keeping us posted, and we'll be following everything closely. And the grand opening of the new Cafe La Rue should happen somewhere around mid or end of October, we're told, right?
Yes.
October. What year? Just kidding. I'm just joking.
No, that's going to be a great. I hope. I know they're going to have a great grand opening, right? Celebration.
Oh yeah, we'll have a big party, and you'll be able to see my 300 bottle wine vault. It'll be all glass. You can see all our cool stuff that we have in there for
and
Scrooge
of course, Portos. And about 400 labels below this place. In your wine cellar. You should give tours of that because apparently it's fascinating, right?
It's my favorite place in the hotel. If you're looking for me, that's probably where I am.
Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. Also tonight at Lestat's, after the show, Saline Solutions, who played at Hot La Jolla Nights here. They're a La Jolla band. They're playing in the Lestat's West over on Adams Avenue. So if you're not doing anything tonight, get down there.
You're supposed to come over to La Vie, Joe.
Well, after La Vie, you can go there. So, and Whitney Shea is singing down here till 9 o'clock. So you come over here and hear some lounge music and then go hear a little rock.
The Whitney Shea Trio. Doing a great job, as always.
That's right. Also, today was the grand opening of Nathan Fletcher. Off a campaign office down Mission Valley.
Thanks for the bumper stickers, Joe.
Yeah, I've got more.
These are cool. Fletcher for mayor.
I've got T-shirts and whatnot, and that's a good segue into our guest tonight.
We had a Letcher for mayor. Now it's Fletcher for mayor. But anyway, sorry, I can't resist.
Anyway, that's a good lead into to our first guest tonight because he was down there today, and he is. a very important person in town. We've had some pretty good philanthropists on this show. We've had Irwin Jacobs, Malin Burnham, and I would fit this guest in that category because he's given so much to this city. And he has been one of the most respected business leaders, and since 1977 when he purchased, along with his partner, the Manpower franchise here. So he's been here 36 years. And he's got a lovely wife, Linda. They live in Del Mar. They have three children, Lindsay, Ashley, and Jeffrey. And but the most important thing is he currently serves as the chair of the San Diego Public Library Foundation, the new high school in the library, the E3 Civic High, and he is also on the currently on the UC San Diego Foundation Board. And it is an honor and a pleasure to welcome you, Mel Katz, to our show tonight. So welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
It's a real thrill. So we're going to get into the library and some of the factoids and everything about that, because I know it's been a three-year-plus odyssey, just construction-wise. But where's your hometown? Where were you raised, and how did you get to San Diego in a nutshell?
Born in New York City.
Okay.
And then when I was 14, my parents left New York City with the family, which was four children, and we moved to Las Vegas.
Huh.
And my dad started a Manpower in Las Vegas.
Ah.
And that was 50 years ago. In 2014.
Huh.
Oh, wow. 50th anniversary coming up.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes.
I didn't know it started in Vegas.
It's a franchise.
Okay.
He started the franchise there. Manpower itself is celebrating its 65th year this year.
Okay.
And then how did you migrate over to San Diego? Just come out for vacation and then said, hey, we should live here?
Exactly.
That's how it always goes, right?
Drove around Point Loma, looked at the streetlights in the middle of the street and said, how can we not live in this city? How can we make a living here?
So what year was that? That was
We moved here in 1977.
Wow.
So 36 years ago.
Well, we have that in common. That's the year I moved out here. But
and it's just a great city.
Yeah. Once you see it, you don't want to leave. You know, if you got to figure out a way to set your roots down. So
exactly.
But so you've had a great success in the labor industry. And then how did you get interested in this whole library project? Because it was dead. It was dead on arrival. Right when you got took it over, or where was it?
It was Susan Golding's last year.
Mm-hmm.
Under Susan Golding, she decided on where the location would be, which was right by Petco Park, but Petco Park hadn't even been started yet. And she put me on the library commission, which is seven people that are appointed by the mayor and the city council, and they set policy. And that would have been okay, but it wouldn't have excited me just to set policy.
So that's like 95, 96? Or?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Dick Murphy was mayor, and Dick Murphy came up with a 21st century library plan, where we would have a new main library, and we would have 21 branches that we would knock down small branches and put in brand new branches. And it was a great plan that had all the financing. We were going to go to the bond market. And then the city ended up with financial trouble, and therefore it didn't happen.
But thank God for Vernon Taylor, because I was at the grand opening of the Pacific Beach Library, but he stepped up in a big way.
Yeah, really, in the last 8 years, we've opened up seven of the new libraries, and but that still leaves 14 left to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the neat things about San Diego are our community libraries.
Yeah.
The community libraries are great.
Yeah.
And then we move forward to Jerry Sanders. And we kept pushing this new central library that people have been talking about for 30 years in San Diego.
Yeah.
And Jerry said, if you can do it, it can't have any new bonding, it can't have any new taxes, and it can't touch the general fund. So therefore, it's not going to affect the branches, it's not going to affect police or fire, and it's not going to affect park and rec. And if you could do that, go for it.
Huh.
Slam dunk, right?
And I was the head of the Library Foundation, and there's 17 of us, and we put together a plan that was able to do it.
Yeah. Of course, you had a lot of salesmanship to do, right, and putting the whole presentation together.
Yeah. It's really, truly a public-private partnership.
Yeah.
And all of the stars were aligned. When you look at it, we got $80 million from CCDC, the Redevelopment Agency.
Mm-hmm.
They're no longer around today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We got $20 million from the state, who had passed the library bond measure, and we were on our last extension, and we had gotten $20 million from them the most. And then we got $20 million from the school district, because Prop S passed, and they wanted to put in a downtown high school.
How much is that so far, Richard?
It's, that's 120.
And therefore, we needed to raise $65 million.
Yeah.
And we have raised the $65 million, and therefore, The $185 million project is 100% paid for.
Wow. Plus my $150 for my brick, don't forget.
Joe Vecchio has a brick. I've seen it. Everybody get down to the library next week and look at Joe's brick.
Anyway, folks, well, let's take a break, a first break right now. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life live from Love V right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with our special guest, chairman of the Library Foundation, and looking forward to the big grand opening next Saturday, the 28th. Mel Katz is back with us. Welcome back, Mel.
Thank you, Joe.
So let's get into some of the specifics about the structure. It's been a three-year odyssey, right, as far as the project itself?
San Diego has been talking about this library for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
On June 28th, 2010,
mm-hmm.
the city council really had the vision to go ahead and move forward with this project.
Mm-hmm.
And on a vote of 6-2, voted to move ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 month later, we actually broke ground.
Hmm.
And, you know, you keep hearing the president talk about shovel-ready projects.
Mm-hmm.
1 month later, we broke ground. And over 750,000 construction hours have been spent on this project.
Wow.
So think of the recession that we've gone through,
mm-hmm.
and think about the amount of paychecks that came in because of those 750,000 hours.
Kind of reminds me of, it wasn't not as bad, but the Rockefeller Center was the only construction project in New York City when the Depression was when hit. So, if you're lucky enough to have work, it's great. So.
But the place is huge. How many square feet?
400,000 square feet.
Okay.
Our current library that's close to 60 years old is 144,000
right.
square feet.
Right.
And there's so many more things in this library. This library is going to have 400 computers. Our current library has 80.
Wow.
This library has a standalone auditorium that seats 350.
And has parking too, right?
There's 250 parking places right below the library, and then right across the street is all of Petco's parking.
Right, 250 more.
You can even park there during a Padre game. There's room.
And I got a sneak peek this week. There's also the auditorium's right by the garden as you walk in, but there's also a 333-seat the west-facing multi-purpose room. Is that the one that looks out at Petco Park? That one? Oh, my gosh. That is, there's going to be a lot of great events up there. Well, you already went to one, right? They had the donor party the other night, right? Pretty spectacular.
When people start going into this library, and we officially open on the 30th,
mm-hmm.
really, they're going to be blown away that this is so much more than just a building with shelves and books.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gathering place. It's a meeting place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place that you're going to go for lectures and concerts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a matter of fact, the first night that we're open, on the 30th, we have Geraldine Brooks, a Pulitzer Prize winning author there,
mm-hmm.
and we have over 700 people that are coming,
yeah.
and we have a seating for every one of them.
Yeah.
And the dedication is 2 days before that, Saturday the 28th, a week from today?
A week from today, which is really going to be fantastic. At 11 o'clock, we start the dedication. It's 1 hour. We'll be over by noon. And then from noon to 6, we are going to have a huge San Diego celebration. It's going to be a street fair that takes over 5 blocks. We're going to have 4 stages. We're going to have 55 interactive booths. We're going to have Steve Pultz coming and entertaining for an hour.
San Diego legend.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic guy.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Heroes coming.
Oh, they're good.
We have Clint Perry and the Boohoo Band.
Mm-hmm.
We have Hullabaloo. And just for you, Joe, we have a Fancy Nancy parade. Now, do you know who Fancy Nancy is?
I don't, but I heard you talking about her today.
See, now Richard knows who Fancy Nancy is.
If you got little girls, you would know, right? If you have daughters.
So an hour and a half before the 3 o'clock parade, all little girls will go in and get their makeup done. They're going to get their hair done. We put hats on them and bows on them.
Hmm.
And then they go through the whole 5 blocks for the street fair as a parade. And then we have a signing of the Fancy Nancy books by the author, who's Robin Price Gleason.
Huh. Well, it'll probably be packed. I'm glad our show is going to be recorded that night, so I can go down there and have a beer, right, Richard, and not show up here.
I think you can go and dress up as Fancy Nancy.
You got Saturday night off, Joe. You can go stare at your brick all day. Mel, question, the new high school.
E3 Civic High.
E3 Civic High. What's behind E3?
Well,
what does that mean?
It's a partnership with the school district, with the city, with the library, and the three E's are engage, educate, and empower. And civic, it's all about civic engagement.
Huh.
And it is amazing. It started on September 3rd. We have 270 students. We have an unbelievable head of school, Dr. Helen Griffith. Mm-hmm. And they will be working on project-based learning, on real problems, and they are going to take those things and really come up with solutions. And because of the location, downtown community is an extension of their classroom.
Huh, that is great. So it's kind of like High Tech High, but in a different wrinkle there with more about civics and civic engagement.
Exactly.
These will be the political leaders of the future generations.
Oh, yeah. And we're one trolley stop away from City College.
Mm-hmm.
If a student wants, they're going to be able to graduate this school after 4 years, not only with their high school diploma, but with their AA degree from City College.
Wow.
Talk about trying away.
Fast tracking.
Talk
huh?
about keeping kids in school and motivating them not to drop out.
Yeah.
You can graduate with an AA degree and a high school diploma because of this school.
Wow.
Wow, that's incredible.
Are you the first ones to try that, or has that been going on since?
No, other schools do it also, but not that many, and that's going to be a major effort for us. So,
wow.
We are the first library in the country that has a school in the library.
Wow, who came up with that idea? That's a great idea.
Prop S passed, and they called for a school downtown, and myself and Judith Harris went and talked to the superintendent and said, we have a great place for that school. And they,
you're not kidding. That's a great place for that
school. We were always going to lease out those two floors, mm-hmm. and they were going to be office space.
Huh. Well, that is, you know, we'll get probably national recognition. I'll bet President Obama shows up. Oh, my God. I mean, that's we'll get national recognition, don't you think, Richard?
We already have.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. People across the country know that San Diego's been.
But I'm talking about the library per se, the new library.
Well,
this is cool.
It's common knowledge. It's been a long, long journey.
I'll tell you, compared to the original site, there were no windows, nothing to look at. You wouldn't get inspired other than the books itself. This place, you walk in, you get up to the top, there are three stories of glass window. You look out at the panorama of
the dome,
city.
Joe.
It is.
Great dome.
And you can walk outside, too. I mean, people write books in this place.
I was over there today. Our children's area is 10,000 square feet on the ground floor. Our teen center on the second floor, 5,000 square feet, and we have a 1,000 square foot homework center. So that's 16,000 square feet, which is basically the size of our branch libraries.
Huh.
And you say, why do we need 16,000?
Why do we need 16,000?
Because we have 37 elementary, middle, and high schools within 2.5 miles of this library.
Isn't that great?
So, as amazing as this library is and how great it looks, it's all about the people we serve.
Yeah.
And the people in the surrounding area of this library, 27% of the families fall below the poverty level.
Hmm.
A third of them will use the library computer to get on the internet.
Yeah.
We took a philanthropist through the other day, and he said, why do you need 400 computers? Everyone can get a computer for $200.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone can get high-speed internet.
Right. Right.
And that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
It's a completely wireless building with high-speed internet.
And, of course, a lot of books are online these days. Richard, your book is online.
My book is online.
But
there's nothing like a real library.
Right.
And great to have computers, too.
And only new material is online.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have material back to the 1500s. We have the second largest baseball collection outside of Cooperstown.
I just was going to mention that. I saw some great baseball memorabilia there. And the rare collections are there, too. And, of course,
I'm going to be checking out your baseball collection.
And us being,
because I've got one of the 10 largest baseball collections of any private collector in the country.
And we can always use new merchandise. So if you want to make a donation to the San Diego Public Library.
Yeah, I've got some duplicate stuff from the 19th century.
I will loan my. I've got a baseball.
We would definitely be interested.
That's a deal.
I've got a baseball. Signs got Maris and Mantle's signature and the whole 64 Yankees team on there, and I will I'll loan it.
our current library gets 10,000 people a week in this small library that two-thirds of the collection was underground.
Really?
This library is going to get 40,000 people a week. So is that ball better off on your shelf where no one sees it, or in our library?
I think it'd be great.
I think you should give it to me this week.
Right now, John.
How many baseballs have Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle on the same baseball?
And starting next week when we open, you will be able to see that ball in your new San Diego Public Library. Thanks, Joe.
Anyway, that'll be great. So so who's going to be honored and speaking at the grand opening? Do we know yet? Or
Todd Gloria is the
interim mayor.
His show. He will be running it. Mm-hmm. We'll have the Navy Band. Mm-hmm. The Color Guard will be veterans. Mm-hmm. The Girl Scouts will be doing the Pledge of Allegiance. The Gay Men's Choir. The Children's Choir is going to do the National Anthem, mm-hmm. and it will close with Joan and Irwin Jacobs, who are our major donors for this project, speaking.
Well, that's great. He's been on the show, so he's just a wonderful person. So, but Mel, we have to take our first long break right now. But
Mel, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. I look forward to seeing you on the 28th, and I'll be there all day to enjoy the festivities. So.
Perfect.
And,
hey,
glad to see Dr. Seuss on display, too, there in the Children's Zoo. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life and our next guest right after this. All right, we are back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life, and now over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
Real quickly, Lovely Lobby, as always, can't beat this location. Joe's having fun with the wine, as always, as you can tell.
I am. I'll sip, you talk.
Our major sponsors, UBS with Mr. Michael Caranta and Drew Freitas, Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. Joe, I get to drive with you to Newport Beach on Wednesday. Don't forget to pick me up. Jason Kruger and Signature Analytics, best CFO company on the planet. Our favorite CPAs, Plato Epic CPAs up in Vista. Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, and right across the street from Lovely Lobby, Regents Bank, Steve Sefton, Sean Puckett. And Joe, how can our wonderful listeners find out about our even more wonderful
sponsors? Well, if they go to www.iymoney.com, click on the Sponsors tab. All their information is there, their bios, their contact information, and they've been professional colleagues of yours for many, many years, so I know you vouch for their professionalism.
More than I can count on my fingers and my toes.
So we don't just find them in the yellow pages, folks. They're tried and true and all outstanding in their field. So,
And we're going to continue our literary theme, though.
Yes.
We have an amazing literary agent with us named Mr. Bill Gladstone. And he's going to talk about his new book as well as what's going on in the publishing world, because I know that world has changed dramatically. So, Mr. Bill Gladstone, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm enjoying the wine here at the Valencia Hotel and my wonderful hosts here.
And are we going to be able to get you to get down to the new library?
Absolutely. That was a great presentation.
Listeners couldn't see this, but Bill did donate some of his books to the new library while
Absolutely.
We're sitting here on break.
And the timing couldn't be better. My new novel, The Power of 12, comes out October 1st, so the first day the library is open. You can go down there and get a copy. And also, I gave copies of my previous novel, The 12, as well as The Golden Motorcycle Gang, Tapping the Source, and the DVD, Tapping the Source.
So you are very versatile in the literary community, but tell us briefly about your new book that's coming up here, The Power of 12.
The Power of 12 is really about the change that happened on December 21st, 2012. It was the end of the Mayan calendar,
right.
And of course everyone thought the world was going to end, but the Mayans never felt the world was going to end.
I didn't think so either.
They were talking about...
Really?
A change in consciousness.
Right.
And this change in consciousness is actually happening. There's evidence of it in many different societies throughout the world. And the main theme of this change in consciousness is the rise of what they call true feminine power. And that does not necessarily mean just the rise of feminine energy, but males who encompass feminine qualities or feminine wisdom, if you will. Intuition is rising. And, of course, we see specifically that we have more women rising to positions of authority in government, in business, and even in sports.
Well, it's something I wrote about in my latest book.
Yeah.
So people, it's dear to my heart.
Richard, people might want to know, how is Bill so smart? This gentleman here graduated.
He went to most of the Ivy League schools.
Went to Yale College, got a graduate degree in cultural anthropology from Harvard, and resides in Cardiff by the sea. So I think people should know that, right? Crescendo, Richard, crescendo.
Well, look, we've talked about a shift in consciousness on the show. We talked a lot about when we had all of the financial sit-ins, the protests that were going on about a year ago.
My novel, The Power of 12, actually deals with that, but I'm not concerned with the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned with the 1/10 of 1/10 of 1/10 of 1%,
okay.
Representing about 319 families, at least in the novel, who control about 90% of the wealth on planet Earth right now.
Huh. And how do those families in your novel feel about the shift?
They don't like it at all.
I was going to guess that. This thing about money and power.
I mean, we've got a lot of characters in my novel, both real people and obviously fictional. One of the main characters is George Bush, And in the novel, at least, he's a pawn of the Illuminati. And some people think that that's not fiction, but, you know, I leave that to the readers.
But he's a character. George W. or H.W.? Or all of them?
All of them, actually. Okay. Yeah, actually, you can go all the way back to the grandfather.
I'm going to have
Walker.
To buy this.
Well, life is a constant. Life is a constant battle for territory, and the powers that be don't like to.
Well, I went
share.
To Yale, and Skull and Bones is real, and some of the things that people, you know, are concerned about Skull and Bones are actually things they should be concerned about.
So our listeners know, what's the website of your new book?
WilliamGladstone.org. I use William for my writing. I use Bill for my agenting.
Okay.
I also see 12 the book also .com.
You can also go to that was the website. So they've combined the websites. If you go to 12 the book, 12thebook.com or WilliamGladstone.org, they're the same site.
Wonderful. 12-21-12, a new 12-21-12,
and we're still here. So I want to change the topic ever so slightly, but you are very well known as a literary agent. I know the world of books, the business of books, has changed, I think, dramatically would be an understatement over the last 8, 10, 12 years.
Absolutely. I mean, I go to conferences all the time, and, you know, I was at a conference about a year ago, and I was mentioning, well, I don't know why people are so concerned. I just did 4 6-figure deals for my authors. And I said, Bill, how are you doing 6-figure deals? I said, it's easy. These authors used to get 7 figures.
Yeah. move the decimal point.
And unfortunately, it's true. I do represent a lot of very well-known, you know, Neil Donald Walsh, Conversations with God, Eckhart Tolle, New Earth, you know, and they do sell hundreds of thousands of copies, and they still do generate
Deepak
millions
Chopra,
of
dollars. Right?
Yeah, Deepak. I've worked with Marianne Williamson, Gene Houston, Jack Canfield, you know, the list goes on. Though our real claim to fame was we were the first agency to really focus on books about technology, and that led to the creation of the Four Dummies series. And as a series, there's never been a more successful series in the history of publishing.
Right.
We're over, I think, 200 million books sold.
Wow.
And collectively, just the authors, because I didn't represent 100% of those books, but just the authors that I've represented have generated over $3 billion in retail sales.
Wow.
Whoa.
And weren't you one of the pioneers with e-books and other things that would be considered modern?
Well, we were too early, actually. We started the first e-book company more than 15 years ago, and it was just too soon. The partner that I had, Steve Potash, went on to create what is now the primary e-book company for libraries. It's called Overdrive, and he ended up getting funding from Microsoft. So it ended up okay. I also was the pioneer who started the first print-on-demand company. Again, I was a little early. That company went on to become iUniverse, which is now part of AuthorHouse, which is now part of Penguin. Everything is getting put together. Your timing is as important as your ideas. I've always been just a little bit ahead of the curve, and sometimes that's worked to my advantage and sometimes not.
How about audiobooks? Is that a growing market?
Not really. Audiobooks are growing as downloads, but decreasing in terms of stores. Actually, all physical goods are decreasing. Physical book sales through retail stores are decreasing. Because of Amazon and other e-tailers, the total number of physical books sold is maintaining, but it's not growing. It's being replaced by the e-books.
We need to be like a Warwick. It's been there for how many years, Richard? But they,
over 100 years for Warwick.
But well, they make up for it on other products.
We're not gonna disappear in terms of bookstores. But as you know, Borders went out of business. Barnes & Noble dedicates less than 50% of their shelf space to books. And the independents are struggling. I mean, you have certain good bookstores like Warwick's that are going to make
Powell's,
Powell's. But my vision, unfortunately, is not positive for the book industry. I see 2 to 3 major bookstores per city, and then a lot of specialized kiosk stores. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but I very much doubt if 10 years from now we will have Barnes & Noble or an equivalent chain.
But Warwick's has a lot of other products they sell stationery.
Absolutely.
And scrapbooks.
Well, and what's going to happen is you're going to have specialty stores. Like, you could have a sports store that has a sports book section, and that's going to be the model for the future rather than just a dedicated bookstore.
But Bill, aren't more and more people publishing, aren't more and more people writing books than ever before?
More people than ever before, because 30 years ago, if you wanted to write your own book, it probably cost you $25,000 to $30,000 to find an editor, get it printed, find a big warehouse to store it. Today, you don't need any of that. For less than $500, you can go to CreateSpace, and we actually, because what has happened in the book publishing world is you either are a big name or you're a no name. It used to be you had what you called the mid-list. So for some of the authors that are coming to me that we can't get the 6-figure deals for, we're actually just going ahead and we created our own ebook company, Waterfront Digital Press, and we're actually charging the authors about $1,000 to do the setup. and then the books are distributed everywhere. And if the author can do the promotion and generate enough buzz, then we'll start selling international rights and, if possible, place them with a larger publisher.
That's great. A lady just asked me the other day. She's retired. She worked at Vaughn's for many years. I don't know if I should mention brands, but anyway, she writes poetry, and she wants to get her book of poems published. So I'm going to let her know about
absolutely.
This.
We can do poetry and other forms that really you couldn't do 20 years ago because it was cost prohibitive.
Wonderful.
But we're a financial show, so what's selling in terms of books?
What's selling is, well, 50 Shades of Grey was the biggest seller,
sure.
You know, last year. The Harry Potter books,
right.
The Hunger Games series, those, you know, the tried and true and the big names, you know, Stephen King, Grisham, they're always going to sell.
Going after the youth market, though, right? A lot of the youth market.
YAs are selling very well. Mm-hmm. That's young adult novels.
Young adult, right.
But, you know, in terms of what the future holds for a new author, you know, that's going to break through, nobody has the crystal ball that's going to tell us. It's the genre. It's really a combination that is impossible to predict. Celebrity books are always going to get published. If you haven't, you know, if you're an A-list celebrity, the assumption is you have enough.
Like a memoir, Carol Burnett or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, more, Carol Burnett wouldn't do so well right now.
No.
It would have to be somebody much
more
younger.
Current.
It would have to be somebody
Oprah.
Like Lady Gaga, for
Oprah.
Example. If she does a book, it'll sell a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a couple of million people in your social media, you know, the assumption is you're going to sell at least 10% of that. That'll make you a bestseller.
Well, I have a prediction right now. I predict we have to take a break right at this very moment. So we'll be right back with more Richer Money and Your Life in our last segment. Hang on, and we'll be right back.
Now, live from the La Valencia Hotel, it's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
And we are back from the magnificent La Valencia Hotel with our special guest, literary agent and author, Bill Gladstone, myself, and Richard Meester. So welcome back, everybody. Where should we take this, Richard?
Bill, question. So I have a lot of friends who are writing books, and they don't have any following whatsoever, but they think they have great ideas, and they think they're great writers. What kind of advice would you give? I call them typical authors now. Everybody wants to write a book. Everybody thinks they have a great story, but nobody has a following, and nobody has any money.
Well, they have to have a little bit of money.
Well, I mean, have a little bit of money.
I mean, they have to have at least $2,000 or $3,000 to hire a good editor.
Right.
The most important thing is to get a good editor.
Okay.
Not necessarily your spouse, someone who's actually going to be critical and who has experience in editing real books.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean books that have been published by major houses. If you're willing to invest time to write a book and you're willing to take the criticism that a real editor will give, then it is worth, because it's so inexpensive, to use CreateSpace or some similar authoring company and get your book out and then promote. With print on demand, you can do local signings and you can have events. It depends on the type of book. If it's in the mind, body, spirit space, Unity Churches are great. We do have an author that we took on. Really, I just liked him. His name is Jake Ducey. He has a little book called Into the Wind.
Jake's going to be on the show in about 2 months.
That's fantastic. Well, Jake went out. He did get some family support so that he could print 5,000 books. We're already into a second printing. So it can happen, but he's very dedicated. This is what he wants to do with his life. So, you know, if you're retired and it's just something you're doing as a hobby, you should only do it if you can afford to probably lose whatever money you spend and be happy selling 50 to 100 copies, because
well,
like that is the norm.
It's a legacy project for a lot of people, though, right? I mean, it's something.
Well, there's a lot of reasons to write a book. The most important is to give yourself the pleasure of knowing you can do it, because it's not easy to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And the second most important is, even if it's only 50 or 100 people in your immediate network, if those 50 or 100 people are moved by your book, you don't know the impact that it can have. So, obviously, we, as authors, want to reach a million people. We want to reach as many people as we can. But most books don't. And, you know, you need to look at all of the process involved in writing the book and have enjoyment in that process, and then it's worth the investment.
There you go.
It's funny. I started my project as a legacy project, and then it became hard work.
Richard, how many hours would you say you spent on your book? And it's not a large volume. It's a, you know, very modest volume.
Well, my joke is I've been working on it for 40 years. But seriously, it took 11 months. I worked about 800 hours on it over 11 months.
Huh. Wow.
That's a lot.
Just sort of fit that in, you know, to an already not too free schedule.
Well, it's like anything else. I write very often. In fact, every single day I'm doing business writing. So I actually wrote the first draft of both my novels in under 100 hours.
Wow.
And that's kind of unusual. But then I spent probably 300 to 400 hours in the back and forth of the editorial process.
Mm-hmm.
When would you say you get your best ideas, Bill? Late at night, in the wee hours?
I get some ideas late at night, but what I've learned is to just store those ideas. If I wake up fresh, sometimes I will right away, 6 a.m., 7 a.m., before the day gets started. The other technique that I use is I go for beach walks. I go for a good hour, hour and a half beach walk, think through my next chapter, come back. I need a block of at least 2 hours without any interruptions. Just sit down. And I'm very, very disciplined. I will spend 2 hours, and I will write that chapter, and I don't need to be inspired. I will put a schedule, and those 2 hours I'm going to write, whether I'm feeling inspired or not.
Do you ever narrate into, like, your smartphone or anything like that?
No, that's not my I'm old school. You know, we didn't use that when I was learning to write. And I started writing when I was very, very young. My father was a publisher, and my mother was a frustrated novelist. So it was something inculcated in me very young. And I started keeping a journal when I was just 14. Whoa. So I was writing every day, you know, from the age of 14.
It's funny. I started keeping scrapbooks when I was 14. So, Bill, you're 40 years later, I'm doing the same thing again. Bill, you're certainly known as a visionary in the literary field, and you've sort of alluded to what bookstores might look like, what the future might bring. But what's your vision of books, bookstores, libraries, just everything book-related, say, 10, 15 years down the road?
Well, everything is changing. It's really interesting hearing Mel Katz talk about the new library here in San Diego. I happen to be keynoting a conference for librarians in South Carolina in November, and part of the theme is that libraries are going to become regional publishers themselves, because the idea of publishing is changing. And we're still going to have the big bestsellers and the big companies, but everything else is going to be segmented over smaller and smaller communities. And the whole nature of publishing is going to be different 20 years from now than it is right now.
So more target marketing, basically.
Much more target, much more niche marketing. Mm-hmm. And we are going to see complete unknowns. We're already seeing it. There's been at least 20 authors in the last 2 years who were complete unknowns who have sold over 100,000 copies of their books, mostly through ebooks. But then if you sell 100,000 copies of your ebook, I can guarantee any listener out there, you just give me a call, I'll find you a good publishing deal.
So we got to find the next Edgar Allan Poe or somebody like that. How's that?
And Bill, are some established authors having a difficult time adjusting to the modern world? I mean, people who grew up working with paper, they're in their 50s, 60s, whatever the case may be. Is it a hard shift for people?
I don't think it's really a hard shift. I think there's a lot of nostalgia. I'm one of the people that grew up with paper. I prefer reading. I have, you know, my iPad. I can read an iPad. But I really, if at all possible, I'm going to go out and get the physical book. I just prefer that. It was a big shift for me when I first started writing. I did not even type. I did everything pen and, you know, I just felt.
So did Mark Twain.
My connection my connection with the written word and the actual writing was.
Oh, I got one for you. Bill Clinton wrote out his. Now, that's a pretty lengthy autobiography. Mm-hmm. He 13 notebooks. He wrote it out longhand himself.
Well, I appreciate that. And I felt that I was losing some intimacy when I went to the typewriter. Then I went to the electric typewriter. And then finally I went to the computer. Mm-hmm. And each stage, and now I'm very, very comfortable with the computer. I can't imagine doing it any other way. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm sure there are certain writers out there who are still attached and are still writing longhand. When they come to me, I tell them, well, the first thing you have to do is go hire a typist and get this, you know, keyboarded, because no one is going to look at anything that's handwritten. But I think there's a great future for publishing and for writing. It's just different than what it was.
Gotcha.
You know, I think what's really neat about the digital age is so many people have interesting stories, but a long time ago it was hard for people to bring those stories out.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll have more stories next week, Richard, because we have to wrap up right here. But Bill Gladstone, thanks so much for being our guest.
Joe, you get next Saturday off to go to the library.
So do you.
And one thing, let me say, if you want to go to the library, come first at 2 o'clock to Galaxy Bookstore. I'm signing The Power of 12.
Perfect. Wonderful. And get down to the grand opening of our central library next Saturday, the 28th. Thanks to Mel Katz for being our guest tonight. It was a pleasure to have him here. Thanks to Dan Newman, our sound engineer, making us sound great all the time. Thanks to Craig Blank, our con executive. Thanks to Dave Smith, our program executive. You have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money and Your Life from LaVie. Good night.